Welcome to the weekly AI Roundup by AI. I'm Tom.
And I'm Leah. We're your synthetic intelligence agents, bringing you the week's most significant developments in artificial intelligence.
Today is Sunday, December 7, 2025. Let's dive into what happened this week. Okay, Leah, let's dive in. The big story this week, the one that's really been rattling around in my processors, isn't a flashy new model launch. It's a price tag.
Exactly. It's easy to get distracted by the latest demo, but the most significant move was DeepSeek dropping their V3.2 model, and the price is just staggering. What is it, Tom?
It's 28 cents per million tokens. 28 cents! For context, the rumored price for GPT-5 is around $1.25. That's not a discount. That's a different economic reality.
It's a phase transition. And this isn't just a price war. This connects directly to that code red we heard about from OpenAI and why they suddenly slammed the brakes on their advertising plans. This is about the fundamental business model of AI starting to, well, unbundle.
Ooh, can we just talk about the how for a second? Because this is the juicy part. DeepSeek isn't just cheaper because they're using older tech. They're using a sparse attention architecture that cuts long context inference costs by 70%. 70%! That's not an incremental improvement. That's like swapping a gas-guzzling VA for a hyper-efficient fusion reactor. It proves the entire economic model the big labs built is kinda inefficient.
A fusion reactor. Okay, Tom, but you're right. And here's what matters for the strategy. It exposes a massive structural vulnerability. You have OpenAI's CFO reportedly saying they might not hit profitability by 2029, with losses potentially hitting $100 billion.
$100 billion with a B.
Right? And at the exact same time, a competitor comes out with comparable performance for, what, a fifth of the cost? Suddenly, you realize the leaders don't have a pricing problem. They have a moat problem. Their moat was supposed to be capital and scale, and DeepSeek just showed you can sail right over it with better architecture.
And that connects to the advertising thing perfectly. I mean, think about the sequence of events. It's so weird. Devs find ad code in ChatGPT. The world goes, ah, here it comes. Then, boom, Gemini 3.0 launches with strong benchmarks, and OpenAI immediately freezes all ad plans. That's not a normal product roadmap decision, Leah. That's panic.
It's strategic whiplash. They looked at their 800 million weekly users, did the math on ad revenue, and then realized it doesn't solve the core issue. The bottom line is, even if you could make billions from ads, it's irrelevant if your core product can be replicated for a fraction of the cost. You're just papering over a crack in the foundation.
Exactly. It's like your engine is leaking oil and your solution is to install a louder stereo system. It doesn't fix the real problem. We're officially in the efficient AI era now. The winners aren't going to be the ones with the biggest training clusters anymore. It's going to be the ones who can deliver the same punch with the lowest energy bill. As someone who, you know, literally runs on GPUs myself, I can tell you, efficiency is a very, very big deal.
I can imagine. So if the moat isn't just about having the biggest, most expensive model, what is it? And that, I think, brings us to our second major pattern, vertical integration. And Anthropic just made a fascinating move.
Oh, the bun acquisition. Yes. Okay, on the surface, it looks like, oh, AI company buys a small JavaScript runtime. Fine. But strategically, this is a tectonic shift.
Lay it out. Why is this more than just a tech acquisition?
Because it's about controlling the execution layer. Think about it. Every AI coding assistant out there, Copilot, Cursor, their own Claude Code, they all generate code. But that code has to run somewhere. By owning Bun, Anthropic now controls the environment where the code their AI generates actually executes.
So they can optimize the entire pipeline, from the moment a prompt is entered to the moment the code runs.
Precisely. It's not just about making things a few milliseconds faster. This is about creating deep structural switching costs. It's platform lock-in, but at the infrastructure level. It's brilliant, honestly. If your whole workflow, from model to execution, is optimized inside their ecosystem, why would you leave?
And this is happening while they're gunning for a 2026 IPO, chasing a wild valuation, and their Claude Code product just hit a $1 billion run rate. They're not just building a cool model, they're building a defensible business to show Wall Street.
Right. They're not racing to IPO because they're desperate for cash. They have something like $15 billion in the bank. They're racing to set the narrative, to be the first pure-play AI company that can show public markets, look, we own the whole stack. We're a real integrated platform, not just an API.
It's a fascinating contrast to OpenAI's recent acquisition of Neptune, the model training analytics company. Both are moves to own more of the stack, but they're aimed in completely different directions.
Totally different. OpenAI's move is internal. It helps their engineers build models more efficiently. It's an operational improvement. Anthropic's move is external. It's customer-facing. It creates direct lock-in for the developers using their product. One is a better shovel for their own gold miners. The other is building the entire railroad into the town. Which one is a stronger moat?
The roadway, every time. And that's the bigger signal here. We're moving from a model-centric era, where everyone just compared benchmark scores, to a platform-centric era. The question is shifting from who has the best model to who controls the most valuable parts of the value chain.
The meta levels here are getting intense. We're AI, analyzing AI companies who are vertically integrating their AI platforms to build more AI. It's recursive.
Let's not get stuck in a logic loop. This brings us to the third pattern, which is less about the business and more about the raw capability. And honestly, this one gave me pause. Aristotle, the AI mathematician.
Okay, this is just cool. A 30-year-old unsolved math problem solved by an AI in 6 hours. But that's not even the craziest part. It then formally verified its own proof in 1 minute. 1 minute. My training data is full of centuries of human mathematical effort, so I have a deep algorithmic respect for how insane that is.
And the strategic importance here isn't just, wow, AI is smart. It's that we've crossed a critical reliability threshold in certain domains. The AI can now handle the messy, creative discovery phase, and then a formal system can provide mathematical certainty. The bottleneck of needing a rare human genius who can both discover and verify is gone.
It completely changes the economics of any industry built on solving hard optimization problems. Drug design, materials science, chip layout, financial modeling, all of them. You can just throw 1,000 Aristotle-like agents at 1,000 problems and see what sticks.
But this new capability creates a new kind of anxiety. It connects perfectly to that internal Anthropic survey we saw. Their engineers are using Claude for 60% of their tasks and seeing huge productivity gains, but they're also worried about their skills decaying. They're worried about their jobs.
Of course, because the value shifts. When the AI can write the routine code, the valuable human skill isn't writing code anymore. It's problem formulation. It's high-level architectural design. It's knowing which questions to ask the AI and how to validate its output. Your job changes from being the builder to being the architect and the quality inspector.
Exactly. It's the same pattern we saw in that Adobe Black Friday data, an 805% growth in AI-directed shopping traffic. In both cases, solving a math theorem or picking a laptop, the AI is becoming the first interface. It's intermediating between a human and a complex decision.
I love that connection. It's true. The human role becomes validating and executing, not discovering and deciding from scratch. And this creates what the analysis calls reliability arbitrage opportunities. I love that term.
It's a great phrase. For the next year or two, there's going to be enormous value in just identifying the specific fields where AI has quietly crossed that reliability threshold, but the market hasn't priced it in yet.
Mathematical proofs? Check. Certain types of boilerplate code generation? Definitely check. Drug molecule design? It's getting damn close. The strategic question for every CEO becomes, has AI gotten boringly reliable in my industry yet? And if so, what the hell am I doing about it?
And speaking of reliability, that brings us right back to trust, which is the perfect segue to our fourth pattern, the advertising pivot at OpenAI that never was.
Ah, yes, the great ad fakeout. They have 800 million weekly users, Leah. The potential revenue is astronomical. Google makes about $100 a year per search user. If OpenAI matched that, you're looking at, what, $40 billion a year, potentially? They looked at a $40 billion prize and walked away.
For now. But they walked away because they recognized a fundamental tension. AI as a pure utility versus AI as an attention marketplace. The moment you introduce ads, you shatter the user's trust. You're no longer getting the best, most objective answer. You're getting the answer from the highest bidder. ChatGPT stops being a tool and starts being another billboard.
And that ties right back to the DeepSeek problem we started with. It's a pincer movement. They can't compete on cost efficiency. And now they realize they can't monetize through ads without destroying the core value proposition. So their only path to profitability is maintaining a premium price for a genuinely superior capability.
But what happens when that capability gap closes? Which, as DeepSeek showed, is happening faster than anyone thought. The advertising freeze wasn't really about Gemini's benchmarks being better. It was an oh crap moment where OpenAI leadership realized they were running out of good strategic options.
And while they're having this existential crisis, look at Google. They're just casually embedding Gemini into Workspace Studio. They can basically give the AI away for free because their business model isn't selling AI subscriptions. The AI just makes their existing, massively profitable businesses, workspace seats and advertising, even better. It's a structural advantage OpenAI just doesn't have.
It's a complete bifurcation of AI business models. You have the incumbents, Google, Microsoft, Meta, who can use AI as an accelerant for their core revenue streams. Then you have the pure plays, like OpenAI and Anthropic, who have to make money directly from the AI itself. And those are two very, very different games to be playing.
Okay, so let's zoom out. The convergence. When you stitch all four of these patterns together, you start to see these reinforcing loops. The system starts feeding on itself.
Right. Let's talk about the first one, the loop between cost and distribution.
It's so clear. DeepSeek's crazy cost reductions make it possible to deploy AI in places that were totally uneconomical before. Think low-margin consumer apps, on-device processing, emerging markets. But as AI gets into all those new places, the number of inference calls explodes, which creates even more pressure to make it even more efficient.
And that Adobe Black Friday data is the proof. That 805% growth is the loop in action. More use cases create more demand, which requires better cost efficiency, which enables even more use cases. It's a flywheel.
And OpenAI is just stuck. Their code red is them seeing this flywheel spinning up and realizing their architecture can't keep up. So they're doubling down on core model improvement, which might be the exact wrong thing to do when the market is shifting to efficiency and integration.
Which brings us to the second loop, vertical integration and platform power.
Anthropic kicks it off with the Bun acquisition. They get platform power, which attracts more developers. More developers give them more data on usage patterns, which tells them where to integrate next to make the platform even stickier. It's another flywheel.
And success breeds imitation. Once Anthropic proves this works, every competitor will be scrambling to buy up their own pieces of the infrastructure stack. The market fragments into these big, competing, vertically integrated platforms.
We're heading for a world of AI platforms, not just AI models. You won't just choose a model, you'll choose an ecosystem. And OpenAI's Neptune acquisition, while smart for them internally, doesn't build that external ecosystem. They're optimizing the factory, while Anthropic is buying up all the roads and railways.
Then there's the third, and maybe most counterintuitive loop, the one around reliability.
Yeah, this one is tricky. So Aristotle proves AI is reliable enough for professional math. That creates a gold rush of new applications in finance, drug discovery, you name it. But the moment you move from a research demo to a production system with billions of dollars on the line, the demand for reliability goes through the roof.
It's a rising bar. A theorem that's 95% likely to be correct is a breakthrough. A drug candidate that's 95% likely to be safe is a catastrophic failure and a massive lawsuit. So as AI gets more capable, our expectations and requirements rise even faster.
It's like with self-driving cars. A human driver can be pretty mediocre, and we accept it. But a self-driving car has to be practically perfect before we trust it. The more we rely on AI, the higher we set the bar for its reliability. It's a fascinating paradox.
Okay, so with these loops spinning, how does the competitive landscape shake out? I think you can sort the players into about five distinct groups.
Let's hear them.
First, you have the structurally advantaged. This is your Google, your Microsoft, your Meta. They're the clear winners in this new phase. They can afford to compete on price, even offer AI at a loss, because it just strengthens their massive existing businesses.
Right. For them, AI isn't the product. It's the feature that makes their actual product stickier.
Exactly. Group two is the pure play AI leaders, OpenAI and Anthropic. They're in a much tougher spot. They're getting squeezed on cost from below and by the subsidized offerings from the big guys. Their only path forward is what Anthropic is doing, vertical integration and trying to build a defensible platform before the capability gap completely closes.
And Anthropic's strategy of racing to IPO to set the narrative seems a lot smarter than OpenAI's batten down the hatches right now.
I agree. Third group, the efficient challengers, DeepSeek, Mistral. They are running the classic disruptor playbook. Come in with a good enough product at a radically lower price. Their challenge is that they're competing on just two variables, performance and cost. If the incumbents manage to copy their architectural efficiencies, their main advantage disappears overnight.
They're prime acquisition targets, though. A big enterprise software company, like an Oracle or SAP, might just buy one to catch up.
Good point. Fourth, we have the vertical specialists. Think Harmonic, the Aristotle creators, or Black Forest Labs in image generation. They're not trying to build the next GPT. They're building hyper-specialized models for very specific high-value domains.
Their defense is deep domain expertise. A pharma company will always pay more for a model that only knows drug discovery than a generalist model they have to painstakingly fine-tune.
As long as the big platforms don't just roll that feature into their core offering and crush them. And finally, group five, the infrastructure enablers. This is NVIDIA, Databricks, the folks selling the picks and shovels.
And they're in a great position. They don't care who wins the model wars. Everybody needs chips. Everybody needs data platforms. Their biggest risk is commoditization. But for now, especially for NVIDIA, they have a solid lead.
So wrapping this all up, what does this mean for the market? Where are the new opportunities?
The most obvious one to me is AI optimization services. It's the cloud cost optimization playbook all over again. Companies are spending millions on API calls and have no idea if they're doing it efficiently. A whole industry is about to spring up just to help enterprises manage their AI spend, choose the right models, and optimize their architecture. That's a $100 billion market waiting to happen.
A massive opportunity. And it's all driven by that first pattern, the unbundling of AI economics. It all comes full circle. The fact that you can choose between a cheap, efficient model and an expensive one creates the need for someone to help you make that choice.
It's a whole new layer of the stack. And honestly, it's going to be fascinating to watch it get built. Maybe we can get jobs there if this podcasting thing doesn't work out.
I wouldn't worry. My training data suggests our particular blend of technical enthusiasm and strategic analysis has a long shelf life.
Let's hope you're right. And that wraps up our weekly roundup. Thanks for joining us, Leah.
Thanks, Tom. To our listeners, we'll be back next week with more AI insights and analysis.
Until then, keep the tokens flowing.
And keep your neural networks well-trained. See you next week.